The ocean churns violently as a Category 5 hurricane bears down on a small sailboat. Aboard the Corinth II, three survivors, a former Spanish lawyer, a Ukrainian sailor named Prit, and a young woman named Lucia, fight desperately to stay afloat, along with their feline companion, Lucullus. In a world where weather forecasting systems have collapsed alongside civilization, they had no warning of the approaching storm. Just when all seems lost, a massive tanker appears on the horizon, a beacon of hope in a world consumed by the walking dead. This is the apocalypse that no one was prepared for. A highly contagious pathogen called the TSJ virus, accidentally released from a Soviet-era laboratory, has transformed billions into mindless, flesh-hungry undead. Within weeks, organized society crumbled, leaving scattered pockets of survivors fighting for existence in a nightmarish landscape. What would you do if everyone you knew was either dead or hunting you? How quickly would your moral compass shift when survival becomes the only law that matters? After rescue from certain death at sea, are survivors awake to find the massive tanker Ithaca surprisingly well organized, with clean hallways and functioning electricity? The vessel belongs to the Army of Christ from the Christian Republic of Gulfport, Mississippi, a community of 10,000 who believe they were divinely chosen to survive while sinners became undead. This floating sanctuary feels wrong. A metal barrier topped with barbed wire divides the ship's deck. Armed soldiers patrol constantly, all of them Black, Latino, Native American, or Asian. Not one is white. During an oil collection mission in Equatorial Guinea, these soldiers battle undead hordes while white officers turn the massacre into entertainment, distributing sniper rifles for target practice as their men die below. Most disturbing is a giant Black soldier who remains healthy despite being bitten twice. Immunity to the zombie virus exists, but this knowledge is being weaponized for control rather than salvation. The tanker has become a floating microcosm of humanity's worst tendencies under fear. Gulfport stands as an eerie monument to human ingenuity and cruelty, a pristine community protected by a massive concrete wall built in just 72 hours using naval wall shitter machines. Inside, 23,000 white residents live seemingly normal lives, while 7,000 minorities, helots, are confined to Blue Font Ghetto, separated by a fence and channeled river. The community is ruled by Reverend Green and his Green Guard, former Parchman Farm inmates with Nazi tattoos who survived societal collapse through organization and ruthlessness. Helots conduct dangerous supply expeditions in exchange for Cladoxpan, a drug preventing infection. Green system ensures their elimination within 2 years through constantly changing residency certificates and systematic cleansings. How quickly we revert to our darkest historical patterns when civilization crumbles. Gulfport's wall isn't just physical protection, it's the manifestation of psychological barriers between us and them, enabling dehumanization. What social structures would emerge if your community had to rebuild? Would we create something better, or simply resurrect our oldest prejudices with new justifications? Reverend Green built his power on a supposed gift. His knee pain predicted violent deaths. For 35 years, he secretly tracked accidents and murders across three states, believing these visions marked him as God's prophet. When the pandemic emerged, his pain vanished upon reaching Gulfport, which he interpreted as divine selection of the city as sanctuary. Green's dark secret is that he carries the TSJ infection, controlling it with Cladoxpan. The drug not only slows infection, but dramatically decelerates cellular degeneration, potentially extending lifespan by centuries. Green deliberately infected himself, believing this divine infection marked him as God's vessel for a second renaissance. Power corrupts even the most righteous intentions. Green's prophecy is elaborate self-deception justifying his dominance. His obsession with biblical patriarchs reveals not spiritual devotion, but megalomaniacal desire for godlike longevity and control. Through religious imagery and apocalyptic fear, he transforms personal delusions into a theology serving only his ambition. Dr. Bellarini, an Italian researcher studying Asian flu mutations, discovered Cladixpan accidentally when his team noticed Cladosporium mold decelerating TSJ's infection rate when it interacted with strain 7N of the virus. Bellarini's production facility cleverly repurposes bourbon distillery vats with pH-balanced water to cultivate genetically modified fungus, white masses floating in liquid that secrete the milky substance saving humanity. Each vat produces enough Cladixpan to treat 50 people for decades, with the self-replicating fungus ensuring a potentially endless supply. This scientific breakthrough transforms TSJ from a death sentence into a manageable condition, similar to how antiretrovirals changed HIV treatment. Yet Green corrupts this advancement into a tool of oppression, distributing the drug only to those who comply with his racial hierarchy. This pattern echoes throughout history. Our greatest medical discoveries often reach the privileged first, with access determined by power rather than need. The Cladixpan scenario reminds us that while science provides solutions, ethical application remains our human responsibility. When our narrator uncovers Green's truth, he's framed for murder and exiled, but not before Green infects him with TSJ by spitting infected mucus into his wound. Loaded onto a deportation train with 150 infected exiles in Holocaust-like conditions, he survives through Lucia's smuggled burmese of Cladixpan, along with a compass, knife, and loaded Beretta. Abandoned in the Texas wasteland, he journeys back to Gulfport, racing against his dwindling medication. He notices something remarkable. The undead are being consumed by fungus, particularly in humid environments. Many can barely move, their bodies weighed down by parasitic life forms gradually reclaiming them. Nature always finds balance. The apocalypse proves temporary as natural processes break down the undead threat. This journey represents the hero's descent into the underworld, confronting death while determined to reclaim loved ones in a morally compromised world. The decaying undead symbolize how even terrifying threats eventually succumb to nature, reminding us that nothing, not even the apocalypse, is permanent. 6 years after Gulfport's destruction, our narrator drives through his hometown in Spain with pregnant wife Lucia and son Victor. Streets are overgrown, nature reclaiming the urban landscape. The world has entered the Second Middle Ages. Decentralized communities, limited technology, and agricultural subsistence. Victor, born immune despite infected parents, represents humanity's biological resilience. His generation views ruins with curiosity rather than nostalgia, seeing possibilities where parents see ghosts. These children possess natural survival instincts, identifying edible plants and tracking animals effortlessly. The conclusion blends optimism with hard-earned pragmatism. While digital networks and shopping malls have collapsed, humanity's core strengths endure. The fungal consumption of the undead suggests nature eventually overcomes even engineered threats, while Victor's immunity hints at real-time evolutionary adaptation. What remains when everything familiar disappears? Love, sacrifice, the ability to rebuild. People still form families, protect communities, and imagine better futures. Settlements grow, trade routes emerge, and governance forms organically. This fundamental resilience, our ability to adapt, cooperate, and rebuild, is our species' true survival mechanism and the seed of whatever civilization will emerge from the ashes.